The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at tntradio.live. Turning Gen Z into Generation Free.
I'm free.
Freedom of choice.
This is the part when I break free.
Owen Stevens on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to the Owen Stevens Show. I'm so excited, everybody. It has been a long time coming. 4 years ago, roughly 4 years ago, I went upstairs into my dad's studio and I decided to start a random podcast. It seems like that's what everybody does these days. They start random podcasts. I had no idea what I was doing. I got up there and I just kind of spoke a bunch of, you know, gobbledygook into a microphone and spewed it out on Spotify, you know, and here I am 4 years later after much prayer, much help from everybody around me and my amazing team here at TNT, as well as every single listener that I have. I owe it all to you, everybody. We are so excited to go on this journey with everybody listening. Right now in the country, in the world, it seems like there is a lack of meaning, a lack of sense making. There's chaos being injected into every single country, into the values that conservatives have, you know, always believed in. You know, these are things that are collapsing as I speak. They're collapsing all over the world, and it reminds me a lot of, you know, the Great Depression. You know, and we're maybe get there economically, hopefully not, but it reminds me of the spirit of the Great Depression, the way that Americans, the way that Australians, the way that everybody across the world is seemingly down in the gutter. You know, it seems like that, especially after these midterm elections in the States. But it reminds me of the story, you know, the depression of the 1930s and World War II. From March 1933 to June 1944, President Roosevelt addressed the American people in about 30 speeches that he broadcast over radio. He spoke on a variety of topics from banking to unemployment to fighting fascism in Europe. Millions of people found comfort and renewed confidence in these speeches, which became known as the fireside chats. He wasn't actually sitting beside a fireplace when he delivered the speeches. He was behind a microphone in the White House. It invoked memories of the founding fathers, Abraham Lincoln, or other inspirational figures from America's past. The Star Spangled Banner was played after each chat ended, underlining that patriotic message. Finally, the president appealed to God or Providence at the end of almost every speech, urging the American people to face the difficult tasks ahead with patience, understanding, and faith. That is what we want to do to every single listener tuning in right now. We want you to leave this show with patience, understanding, and faith, that things are going to get better, that things are going to get better because you're not alone. And that's probably the most important message that I can give to conservatives who are so used to fighting battles alone. I'm certainly used to fighting battles alone, but I'm not alone. There's plenty of people, millions, billions of people who value freedom, individualism, America, who value, you know, faith in Jesus. And, you know, those are the people that are going to make the difference at the end of the day. This show is going to address a lot of complex political topics. It's going to be, you know, so it'll encourage you. It will challenge you. It might even scare you. We talk about a lot of scary things on this show, a lot of things that are, you know, dangerous to talk about. But this is a show for free speech. It is a show that, you know, there will be no cancel culture on this show for every single one of my guests. And every single one of my listeners. I encourage you also to contact me in my chat. There's a little thing beneath my, I think it's my bio in the website where you can reach out to me personally if you ever, you know, want to suggest an improvement. That is always open. Guys, this is, I'm very excited. I'm very inspired. I have a great lineup of guests for you today. We have a great lineup of guests every single day, but I'm very honored to introduce my first guest. I've had him on several times. I absolutely love talking to him. William K. joins us today. He attained a BA in 1982 and a law degree in 1985. After briefly practicing law, he went on to establish small business and nonprofits. He's written two books, The Green Swastika, Environmentalism in the Third Reich, and From Malthus to Mifepristone, a primer on the population control movement. He's produced or appeared in countless radio shows and has had hundreds of articles posted across dozens of websites, and he's been an outspoken critic of the catastrophic anthropogenic global warming hypothesis and related policies for over 35 years. William Kay, how are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
Really, really good. This is the first, this is a privilege, man. For me and you, this is the first episode of the Owen Stevens Show. I'm very, very excited to have you on.
Wow, that is an honor. That is an honor. And I was keening too. I was doing some additional studies. I was told it was going to be primarily about the From Malthus to Mifepristone population control book. And the trouble with that book is the second half, the first half of the book is timeless. You know, it's the history of the movement. It's basically a political movement that in the English-speaking world we can date to a precise publication and a precise activist project, and this political movement goes on to the day. So the first part of the book is that. The second part of the book is an attempt to give you a snapshot of what the movement is like right now. And I wrote that 1919, I think, and you know, so many of those businesses and agencies and what have you, they're always sort of shifting their names around and they're going out. So it's hard to keep that sort of stuff up to date. So I went the extra kilometer and I was trying to update myself on the state of the movement today, the state of the population control movement today.
And, you know, this is a really interesting topic. I'm really fascinated by it, but it's also very scary. Because what we're getting into right now is, especially when you talk about COVID-19, we're getting into the actual practices of these of the population control movement that have been put into place, right? And what we're seeing right now, I mean, what they're doing is they're purposefully injecting, you know, our food with GMOs. They're destroying our environment. What else? They're spraying chemicals. They're giving people vaccines, giving us poisonous medications, and so on. They weaken our immune systems. They're making us infertile. Right, we're prone to heart disease, diabetes, cancer, and other potentially fatal illnesses that will both control population growth and reduce the number of people in the next generation. There are many other measures taken as well, but let's talk about a little bit of the history because this is a really interesting topic.
Owen, I got to push back a bit on that. The things that you just listed there, I really don't think that the actual population control movement has been very much involved in. What they are very big in is abortions, surgical sterilizations, the promotion of contraceptions of all different varieties, fertility suppression, the promotion of homosexuality, and other stratagems like that is what they're operating. I don't really believe even the COVID, as much as I protested it, I didn't think of it as a mechanism to increase mortality rates. The only where in the English-speaking world I could directly accuse the population control movement of actually trying to uptick mortality. Like you fight on two fronts. You want to suppress the fertility of the group, and you want to increase the mortality rate of the group.
Okay, so let me ask you the question.
That is the promotion of euthanasia, the promotion of medically assisted suicide, and in the promotion of harm reduction, which I view as a promotion of drug paraphernalia and a destigmatization of drug use, which is very dangerous and is also will definitely increase the mortality rate of the social problem group, of the group that the elites really, really want to get rid of.
I think abortion is that's one that I did not list, but that was the next thing that I was going to list, which is, I think, you know, that's the most easy one to point out that you could, you know, talk about, which is, you know, especially when it comes to, I mean, in America, at least, especially when it comes to black children, to black babies, they seem to get targeted. You know, they get aborted on a level way higher than any other race does, keeping that population, you know, firmly at 13%. It's almost as if they've practiced that population control on the black community. Talk a little bit about, because I do want to address COVID-19, and you don't think that do you think that this virus was naturally occurring? That's a question I'll ask.
That's a really tough one. That's a really tough one. Initially, I was a COVID protester, and 90% into this thing before it ended, I was of the view that it was probably just another natural virus. You know, keep in mind that it's like over two-thirds of all the known viruses that humans have, we get them from animals. you know, like rabies and bird flu and swine flu. Like, it's not at all unusual for humans to get a weird new virus from animals. It happens all the time. So I was of the view that, you know, that it was probably just a conspiracy theory, but there's been some stuff coming out lately from very high level sort of official authorities. Yes. Really starting to question whether or not the American government might not have actually engineered this. Some of that research might have been paid for and done in other countries like Ukraine and China.
Yes.
That's a possibility
China, yeah.
now. I mean, there was a time when the Americans and the Soviets had biological weapons facilities. They were manufacturing biological weapons. They allegedly had signed a treaty. They were never going to do that again. But everyone always sort of doubted whether they fully shut everything down. So it's a possibility, but I would still sort of incline toward the likelihood that it was just another one of these viruses that popped from animals to humans.
Let's talk about that, because that's really interesting. And one of the things we should always do is follow the money. This is a very important thing to address and to nail down. And what, you know, for me, it's awfully convenient that when a new disease pops up that is supposedly naturally occurring, that big pharma, that the vaccine companies, that the government that's working in tandem with both of them profit enormously off of new diseases. Like, this is exactly my point, which is that, you know,
preordained. Because
so go into that a little
bit. During the Cold War, a series of protocols were entered into amongst all NATO governments. The agency that Fauci works for, that National Allergies and Infectious Diseases outfit that employs about 1,200 people, every country in NATO has one of those outfits. And there's a whole bunch of other little outfits like that. And they represent sort of an industrial complex of their own. And they had already had protocols installed. In case we were attacked by a biological weapon, what were we supposed to do? What were the hospitals supposed to do? They had drills in place. You know, we might have to mask the whole population. We might have to quarantine the whole population. We might have to set up field hospitals in the parks, in the cities. But these plans were already in place. So they knew when they pulled the fire alarm, all that was going into action.
And there was also patents on this vaccine.
Like, suddenly I was in this police state that I couldn't believe in.
Right. I'm right with you.
Those regulations were already in place. Go ahead, Owen.
Yeah, so there was also patents that were, you know, that are years old, you know, decades old, on mRNA, on this new technology, on the treatment for this disease and on the disease itself. So for me, you know, this is a gain of function catastrophe. This is something that is not that is not from nature. I don't think that there is at this point. I think there's enough evidence to suggest that, you know, through China and through the Pell Grant or whatever, not Pell Grant, that's for college, but whatever grant that was given to China to work with Fauci, to work with the American companies for, you know, with gain of function research. This is what Rand Paul has been questioning Fauci on for a very, very long time. What I spoke about earlier was poisonous medications, right? And weakening our immune systems. This is something that I do think absolutely links to population control. One of the things that they did when the COVID-19 virus spread is they quickly told everybody that they had to mask, lock down. They told everybody that, you know, the conventional lockdown narrative that we all went through. But the other thing that they did was demonize medications that actually worked. Hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin. These are medications that serve to save people's lives, right? And so it seems as if that the government actually didn't have any interest in protecting life. They didn't have any interest in limiting mortality. If they had an interest in limiting mortality, then they would have pushed ivermectin. They would have pushed hydroxychloroquine. Instead, what did they do? They pushed an experimental vaccine that is already killing people worldwide. They also pushed something like remdesivir in hospitals. They pushed these breathing machines on people, and the technical name, but these machines that ended up killing people and old people in hospitals. They pushed remdesivir, which leads to liver problems and lung problems that's killed people in hospitals. And they made it seem like ivermectin was, you know, horse dewormer. They lied on CNN. So my question is, if COVID-19 was not, if this is not, you know, depopulation, if this is not population control, then what is it? Because, you know, limiting mortality did not seemed to be in their agenda. It seemed as if they wanted to maximize mortality, because that's what happened. I mean, you're limiting the ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and the drugs that actually work.
I am certainly not going on record as supporting either of those two treatments. I don't know. I do know what happened. That they knew that once the alarm had been put in place, and once the WHO had declared it a pandemic, there was going to be this race to get the vaccine, and all the big pharma companies were going to do their best to do it. I posted an article online called Big Pharma's Moonshot. To Big Pharma, this was like putting a man on the moon. It was like, you give us a microorganism that's killing people, we'll give you a vaccine in 6 months. And they did it, and they came out. I don't know how well these damn things worked, but the key to the mRNA is just like, you know, all the DNA tests. The little mRNA thing replicates itself. So you can make a whole bunch of it. You can make billions of doses really rapidly. That was the key point. And they wanted to experiment with that. So this was an opportunity to get a $10 billion check Big Pharma got from Uncle Sam alone from Trump, just to buy new equipment to ramp up so they could have these mRNA facilities where you could just drop a little bit in and poof, it makes, you know, hundreds of millions of dosages. They wanted to work with that. So it was an opportunity to pour, you know, billions of dollars into research and development for the pharmaceutical companies that they could use on making other medicines. So people like Fauci and this, they say, well, no, this is all really a good thing. Who cares if it was a bloody scam? You know, we've got tens of billions of dollars of money went to Big Pharma, went into our pockets, and but a lot of it went towards research and development and honing our ability to fight off massive pandemics. I don't think they were trying to kill people. They were trying to loot the public treasury, and they were trying to score tens of billions of dollars in government grants. And then all of those vaccines were sold commercially. You know, they were making $20, $30 a vaccine.
Yeah, we got to go to break, but we're going to get into that and much more with William Kay right after a short break.
You should hear what Hescher is talking about.
The EU's biggest economy could soon become CO2 neutral, but poor. According to Henning Hahn, Germany's economic prosperity is in jeopardy due to a complete failure of the government's energy policy. He told the newspaper Die Welt on Monday that the country's living standards could drop to the level of 1970 in the face of a completely imploding energy transition. We have to ask ourselves, in 10 years, will there still be someone who will produce here and sell their product internationally? We must answer that. One must ask themselves, is a CO2 neutral country even viable? And if not, why are we doing it?
Hescher on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is a message for the parents of young children in the United States. I am Dr. Tess Laurie from the World Council for Health. Please consider the danger of vaccinating your children and babies with the COVID-19 injections. They are not the same as traditional vaccines and are causing significant harm to children around the world. Your children have their whole lives ahead of them. They are not endangered by COVID at all. Please hear us when we say, for your children, it is much safer to wait. Thank you.
The Green New Deal supports the abuse and murder of children in the Congo, mining for cobalt for the electric vehicle. We mandate that the truth be told. TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Owen Stevens Show. This is your host, Owen Stevens, obviously. And we're talking about vaccines and with William Kay here. This is really interesting. So William, you told me earlier, and I do agree with you about the financial incentive to these vaccines. One of the things that was really interesting is as soon as the CDC voted 15-0 in order to put this vaccine, put the COVID vaccine, the mRNA, the Pfizer, the Moderna on the vaccine schedule for kids, one of the first things that Pfizer and Moderna did was hike the price of the vaccine up almost 400%. right? Because they knew that now this vaccine was eligible to be included on that mandatory vaccination schedule for students, and a lot more kids, a lot more people are going to be getting that vaccine. So what do? The demand goes up, you drive the price right up, and you make, you know, four times the amount of money that you would have made otherwise. So I absolutely think that there's a financial incentive, all right? But there is, this is, you know, and you really got to look into this. You've got to look into the amount of people that are dying, the individual stories of the people that are dying suddenly and unexpectedly. One of the things that I saw was a doctor had labeled this sudden adult death syndrome. That's what we're hearing right now, sudden adult death syndrome. People seem, young people that are not at risk of diseases, that do not have any other pre-existing conditions, seem to be dying early and unexpectedly from heart issues, from myocarditis, from pericarditis, from the inflammation of their blood vessels and blood clots, right? And to say that this is just a coincidence to me is very dangerous, and I don't think that we should be doing that. This is, you know, conveniently after vaccination, these people who have often received double, triple, soon to be quadruple vaccines that are now experiencing issues with their heart, they're dying on the sports field. This is some of the most healthy individuals in the entire world. Athletes that are running around that shouldn't be at risk of any heart issues now are dying on the field. This young girl, her name was Grace Rush. She's 14 years old, a perfectly healthy 14-year-old who was double vaccinated, who just died unexpectedly, passed out right onto the field. Her heart gave out. Do you think that, you know, and you don't think that that has anything to do with population control, which that, you know, they've managed to swindle the entire world into believing that this vaccine is good for them, that it'll protect them from a disease that they're not even at risk of dying from in the first place. And not only that, but you have to deliver 3 to 4 vaccines inside of their body. Consequences of that. They're dying. Well,
the motivation could be entirely explained by the money and by the sort of the opportunity for the medical industrial complex to run the government for a few years. That those were the motivations.
So then, okay, if that's the case,
population control is a really different kettle of fish. There is overlaps. I mean, there's a very powerful, these are all doctors for one thing, in both the population control movement and the people running the medical industrial complex. And they're also very closely integrated with the whole eugenics movement, which are almost all doctors again.
Right.
So yeah, there's a powerful element in there that definitely would like to see an increased mortality rate amongst the population. The only place I really saw it in COVID was the maltreatment of senior citizens in specific cities, most notably in New York State under Cuomo.
Sure.
That to me was definitely a homicide, and I don't think I'm the only one who is saying that. I think there's a number of lawsuits now that have been launched by people whose parents were died in that, but they fairly obviously, and I wrote several articles about this, as did other people, as did a lot of the local papers, like the Long Island News. They were all writing about it, but the mainstream media wasn't touching it. But Cuomo and these other ghouls, go ahead.
Yes. Yeah, I'm gonna ask you this because I really want to drive this point home. This is very important. So, you know, when we're talking about the population control movement, would it not be in their best interest to be able to convince millions of people, or at least have the power to convince millions of people, to put something in their body that could be potentially fatal without any questions, if, ands, or buts whatsoever? And then when they die, it's simply labeled and written off as sudden adult death syndrome. Wouldn't that be in the population control's best interest if they wanted to limit the population to be able to have that authority, to be able to have that power, to be able to swindle people?
You're not killing nearly enough people, okay? They're performing over 1 million abortions a year in America. They're performing over 700,000 surgical sterilizations in America. These sudden adult death syndromes are, you know, a drop in a drop. I mean, they're not the sort of thing that you would throw, you know, $1 trillion at achieving. They're going to suppress the fertility of a population. They are going to uptick the mortality of the population and promote euthanasia and promote injection drug use and things like that. Those are the real grim reapers. And in fact, that endocarditis that you mentioned, that is a very common death for injection drug users.
Yes. And
it's just
let's talk about infertility.
In your heart because you're putting this crap in your blood.
Right. So infertility, this is what we saw. We saw this very early on with the Nazis. What we saw Hitler do, his original plan to exterminate the Jews under the Nazi regime was actually to make that generation infertile and to sterilize that generation. All right, that's it. Before it, you know, got out of control and got, you know, spewed, you know, they just eventually just resorted to bullets and killing people as fast as they possibly could. But originally it was sterilization, and they tried that with the Jewish population. That's one of the things that the vaccine does is sterilize people. We have noted examples that this vaccine is causing, you know, infant deaths. It's causing miscarriages, and it's causing mothers to not be able to carry their baby to term. What do you think of the implications of, listen, if they wanted to make people infertile, you know, it would be, how easy would it be if you had a vaccine that everybody took without asking any questions about it?
That allegation has been made numerous times, and I think with some truth, that some of these programs that they're conducting in the Third World and in the Philippines, places like that, they are in fact secretly injecting sterilants into women. It's quite possible. I don't think it happened with the COVID virus. I don't think it could possibly have happened. What is dangerous is this whole business of the government ordering everybody to line up for an injection. I really have an issue with that.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say.
And you're right.
Yeah,
Down the road, could very easily be you're lining up for your sterilization injection.
That's exactly right. Maybe it's not COVID.
The whole COVID thing.
Go ahead.
They were sort of like drilling the population. Okay, come in for your injections now. And where they were lining up around the block to get their injection.
It's very scary. You're right. See, that's my point. Maybe it's not the COVID vaccine in and of itself, right? But what this was, in a lot of ways, this has never happened before.
This kind of virus,
this wide a scale. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think this was a practice test to see if people across the world, if people in America were going to go along with this without any questions, without questioning it, putting it in their kids even, without knowing the long-term health consequences as a result. And what they have proven is that they were right, that people are going to buy this, they're going to inject it, they're not going to ask questions. And that's the scary thing for me to note. And, you know, you talk about the population control movement. If this vaccine, do you think that the vaccine is a weapon, is a practice test for the population control movement, or at least could be used as a weapon in the future for the population control movement?
I have quite a distinct collection of people in mind when I refer to the population control movement. I'm referring to the Population Council of New York City, which has an annual budget of $60 million. I'm referring to the United Nations Population Fund, which has an annual budget of $1 billion. There are hundreds of these sorts of organizations around the world, and there are hundreds of organizations around the world which are purely activist and propaganda groups putting out, you know, the myth of overpopulation. I'm referring to them, and those are the groups that actually, over the decades and generations, built up the abortion industry, built up the contraceptive industry, built up the sterilization industry, and they are overwhelmingly the social force and the motor behind the sort of fertility transition towards this, LGBT, transgendered, you know, drag show story hour nonsense that we're getting.
Yes.
That is rooted. That is a subsidiary of the population control movement. In the 1960s, the real head honchos of this movement were very explicit about this in numerous papers, that they were going to promote homosexuality in the United States purely as a means of fertility suppression. And boy, did they ever.
I think you're right. I think abortion is key. I think transgenderism is also something I want to focus on. You brought up, I think, a great point. This is very exciting. Right now, we're being conditioned by force and by media propaganda to accept the idea that transgenderism is here to stay forever. One of the ways that the trans rights movement does this is to attempt to show us that we are helpless to stop it, right? We can't do anything about it. We cannot stop it. It's intruding into every facet of our lives and threatening to punish us severely if we don't submit, all right? Transgenderism is not the end. All right. The progression of this is new victim groups ever, you know, there's going to be new victim groups that they're going to constantly create with this gender spectrum, demanding special rights. And it is only the beginning. And transgenderism, I believe, is maybe a practice test to transhumanism. One of the things that I'm very, very worried about, one of the very, you know, very interesting things to talk about. Do you know who this, one of the things that I've, at least with, for the population control movement, what I think of first is the World Economic Forum advisors like Yuval Noah Harari and Klaus Schwab. Do you think of those people working at the World Economic Forum as fundamental threats, you know, to our population? Do you think that they fall into that group of population control people?
Yes. Those people would both espouse population control, but they are from an element that'd be very careful about how they talk about it and who they talk about it to. All of the major environmental groups are actually believers in the overpopulation myth. They believe that the world is overpopulated, right, and we must reduce the population. And they went through a long phase in their history when they really fronted this stuff out. And I remember it. In the early 60s and 70s, we were subjected to overpopulation propaganda on a daily basis. But after a while, the big green group stopped talking about it. They didn't want to be associated with the anti-immigration movement, which had a huge following inside the Sierra Club in the USA. And they did not want to be associated with the nasty politics of abortion. And these fights had been won. So there was nothing really in there in it to keep their brand associated with population control, but every single one of them is still on record in their own documents as believing that the world is overpopulated and that the fundamental threat to Earth is exacerbated by overpopulation. And they all support, you know, reproductive rights and all the sort of code words behind, you know, abortion on demand, you know, freely available contraceptives, sweeping mass sterilization campaigns, just sweeping. Which are going on.
And, you know, you're right. This goes in this, the gay marriage argument, you know, this and the whole push for gay marriage in schools, the whole push for the LGBTQ movement does this exact thing. Because although that doesn't really sterilize you, in a way it does. Because if you're, you know, if you're gay, you're not going to have your own kid, right? And that's one of the things that I think is chiefly responsible for this. Talk about what do you feel is the biggest threat to you know, the population? What is it? Abortion? Is it you know, is it contraception? Is it what's going on? What do you view as the biggest threat?
Oh, the environmental movement. Well, you know, the population control movement is there. It fluctuates and back and forth. It's sort of in a steady state now, and it's so contradictory because the same people are also allowing a lot of immigration in. Some of that is just, you know, it just contradictory. You can sort of see what they're sort of, they have in mind, but they themselves are fighting over that because there's a large section of the population control movement that opposes immigration. But that's sort of going on. In terms of biggest threat, if you're in the Anglo-American world, it's more the environmental movement than the population control movement, although those are like conjoined twins. They're very closely associated, those two social movements. But the biggest threat to North Americans is the environmental movement and its suppression of economic activity, and the climate movement or the climate industrial complex and its effort to destroy the American oil and coal industries. Those are your biggest threats.
Yeah.
Those are, that's what you do to countries in war. You know, you bomb their coal mines and you bomb their energy generating facilities. That's what's been going on in North America for the last 15 years. The war on coal, the war on oil. This is not an energy policy made for the English-speaking world, Canada, Australia, or the United States. We are the fossil fuel superpowers. We don't want this energy transition. And if we allow them to take that, to knock us out at the knees and really destroy our energy industries, we are doomed. So that is the problem.
Yeah,
the
I think that's
culprit
right.
is the European Union.
Yeah, and the, you know, the way that Biden has tanked the economy purposefully, right? You know, these inflation policies. Do you think that the, you know, anything that the Biden administration, what would you point to, you know, that the Biden administration has done to further this agenda forward?
The Inflation Reduction Act. It grants $40 billion a year in subsidies to renewable energy. And, you know, it doesn't seem like a lot of money compared to what the military-industrial complex does, but that's $40 billion a year. State governments have their own programs that are subsidizing it, as do a lot of municipal governments and universities and things like that. There is, you know, probably $80 to $100 billion of government money and tax break going at a renewable energy industry complex that America simply doesn't need. It's an absolute
yeah, relying
thing,
on wind and solar.
And movement politics, the built constituency. The more you build up your wind power and solar power, the more people you have working, making these things and installing these things and servicing these things, the more the lobby is. You know, the more that you're employing hundreds of thousands of people, the more clout it gets. So it sort of snowballs. That's how a social movement, by changing the regulations, by capturing state resources, can create entire industries. Like the abortion
and so how is
industry.
This...
There's over 1,600 clinics in America. You know, they employ 10,000 people. Those people, some of the owners of the abortion clinics have created their own pharmaceutical company now.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, we're going to go to break right now, but we're joined by William Kay, everybody, after a short break to discuss more of this.
They're back. The Mask Nazis have returned.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Just when you thought it was safe to show your face again, Dr. Kiernan Moore, Ontario's chief medical officer, now wants you to mask up again in your own home.
I just want to be clear. So if I'm a mom to, let's say, a toddler, and I wake up with the sniffles, you're saying I should be masking at home?
I'm sorry, but you should. You should be doing good hand hygiene, cleaning surfaces, masking as best you can to decrease the risk to that child.
That's right. According to Canada's public health official, you should be wearing masks again in your own home. Have you figured out this isn't about public health yet? But wait, there's more. The public health official you just heard urging you to mask up in your own home, Dr. Kiernan Moore, appeared to have forgotten his own advice and was spotted at a party brushing shoulders with Toronto's elite, drink in hand and not a mask in sight. This according to Blog Toronto. So there you have it. Rules for thee and none for me. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
U.S. intelligence agencies are interfering in domestic politics. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Owen Stevens Show. This is your host, Owen Stevens. I'm joined by William Kay. I want to talk again about education, our school systems, and specifically what's being interjected into our school systems. I recently traveled home for Thanksgiving. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving, William. I did. I definitely had a good one. You know, we traveled back, had a big party with my family. It was excellent. One of the things we talked about was my old school district that I had gone to as a kid, Livonia Central Schools. We had talked about, you know, what's going on. I asked because I was sitting with a person who is currently going to high school there. You know, and I graduated in 2018, and they were a senior, and they told me about how the school has deteriorated completely, about how transgenders are walking through the hallways with transgender flags on their backs, putting up posters saying that straight is wrong and gay is right. And then a kid tore down one of those posters and the school brought him to court and got him expelled, right? They're allowing transgenders into bathrooms. They're allowing, at Dansville Central Schools down the road, they're allowing litter boxes to be placed in classrooms for children who identify as cats, other than, you know, not even identifying as a woman or a man, but simply identifying as an animal. This ideology to me is scary. And I think it goes hand in hand with the population control movement, because what we're doing is convincing people that it is a basic human right to mutilate yourself, to cut off parts of your body, that should be considered a basic human right. It takes a page out of the abortion handbook. You know, this is a basic human right that kids should be able to transition their gender, that you can be whatever you want to be. And it encourages them to cut off parts of their body. And you see the suicide rates as a result. It's no coincidence that the suicide rates are so high in transgender people, and transgenderism is being pushed as hard as it's being pushed. What do you think about how transgenderism, this ideology specifically in schools as it's being delivered to kids, plays in to the population control movement?
Well, these groups, like the Population Council and the Ford Foundation and others that have so long been involved in population control, in fertility suppression, have published, you could fill an entire library with books that they have published. They have a very large academic auxiliary. Much of the demography departments across the United States are admittedly instruments of fertility suppression and things like that. The focus on education, the focus on how to instill new norms, new mores amongst the youth through the educational establishment, that is something they have read hundreds of books about, academic papers about. This is something they studied up the yin-yang. They've done all kinds of focus groups on it. So the extent to which schools across the English-speaking world have been promoting and experimenting with different ways of shifting gender ideas and shifting sexual mores, a lot of work has been done in it, and it's working really well. The media is the other half of it. Just keening for today's show, you want an eye-opener, go to Wikipedia and look up the sections they have on the presentation of LGBT in the media. And it shows the history of it. You know, in the 60s, non-existence. Occasionally there might be a transvestite. And then it's just this absolute upward arc. And what I found interesting is in just general mainstream broadcast and cable television, the number of LGBT personalities in situation comedies or reading the news or whatever you has tripled in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So
I think that with this,
you see so many advertisements now have got gay couples in it. So many of the sort of the news people, like with the CNN, like they seem almost like they're all gay now.
Right.
You know, that has been going on. And that is a big part of the push towards this whole new low fertility transition.
Yeah. One of the things that I think backs this up is they just did a study. Yeah, we'll get to that. There's something that else I also want to ask you about, which is there was a study that I saw this on Breitbart and Daily Wire that, you know, sperm counts are, you know, decreasing worldwide by 60%. What did you see that same study, that piece that they wrote about how sperm counts are falling drastically?
No, I missed that one. I've heard of these sorts of things before. I have not. That seems like a huge number. Not to be ultra skeptical.
Over the past,
that seems like kind of a large number.
It's over the past. So it's over the past. It's a long-term study. So it's not a short-term study. What they've done is they've just added on. They've continuously added on to the percentage of how it's decreasing from a certain point in history. And so maybe it's not the most convincing statistical argument, but it is. You know, it is decreasing. The point is that
I cannot comment on sperm count.
Right.
I don't know.
So
I don't know the answer to that.
Right. It's a difficult one. But I think that it goes hand in hand with how there seems to be a war on men. There seems to be a war on what makes a man a man. Well, there definitely is. But what makes a masculine man a masculine man? And, you know, a war on the family. One of the things that we saw with Black Lives Matter was how they attacked the nuclear family. They attacked the traditional, you know, family makeup. You know, and for them, you know, it seems as if that's, you know, a fundamental evil. For these Marxists, it seems like that's a fundamental evil. Does that go hand in hand? And, you know, the attack on the family that we witnessed from Black Lives Matter, the attack on the nuclear family, that was one of the fundamental things that they wrote in their website.
They would definitely be opposed to the sort of the patriarchal nuclear family. The BLM was a was a bogus movement. It was not a grassroots movement.
Yeah.
I mean, they managed to whip up a lot of the grassroots into the riots and the looting and that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, that was a movement that came down from the Ford Foundation and these other big foundations that have a very... I encourage people to visit the Ford Foundation website if you want to see the roots of BLM. Because that is a very powerful organization that answers to no one, and it's probably dispersing, you know, tens of millions of dollars to BLM groups across America. So I encourage people to look at that. It's kind of a fake thing. BLM was not a player in the population control. That's just more of this sort of racist divisionism that's also plaguing America. That's another threat to America. America's enemies have often viewed that ultimately that's how you would take down America, is to foment like just real racial discord in the country. I view groups like BLM as primarily that, but they have agency of their own. I mean, it's not as though they're entirely puppets of other people. They have their own mobilizations. There is sort of a sense of sort of Afro-nationalism that's in there autonomously. So it's not entirely an invention of the elites, but generally, it is not part of the population control movement. The original, like the Black Panther parties and groups like that, they used to burn down abortion clinics in black neighborhoods. You don't see the modern BLMers doing anything like that. They're quite on the other side of the barricade when it comes to that. But there was another point I wanted to make.
Go ahead.
No,
all you.
Okay.
It's my show. Well, you're going
to
go.
You're saying there's more to it than this. You were talking about your high school and how there's something really wrong going on there with those kids walking around with flags on. They're intimidating the other kids. There's something really wrong with that picture. I called that one book, The Green Swastika, as a hat tip to another book that's called The Pink Swastika, which was written by two Christians from America, one of whom got his house burned down for writing the book. And they picked up on something that I had also observed. I have read many books about the Third Reich, about Nazi Germany, and I had always noticed that there's this real gay theme there, that a lot of the Nazi elite were gay. And I'd always noticed that theme, even in the most authoritative textbooks on the Third Reich, this theme is there again. And what these guys did is they read 200 books on the Third Reich, and they edited them for comments on homosexuality. And the real picture emerges, and this is it. The original Nazi Party had a militia called the Brown Shirts. The militia was run by a guy called Ernst Röhm, and he was more powerful in the Nazi Party from its foundation until Hitler murdered him 1 year after they took power. Röhm was the publisher of a magazine called the Outsider. Basically said it meant the queer, the weird one. But he was a very outspoken, not just gay, a hebephile. And that is a type of pedophile that targets, you know, 13-year-olds, targets kids just as they're going through puberty. But he was an outspoken believer. He said this was the Hellenic love ideal. And his group, the Brown Shirts, were wall-to-wall these hebephiles. And they were actually distributing literature around that. Their main organizing venues were gay bars across Germany. There was probably in excess of 100 homosexuals in the group. Himmler complained to Hitler. Himmler was another guy. He ran the SS. And he complained to Hitler that the only people who are being promoted in the SA are these, you know, very perverted queers that are circling around Röhm. After Hitler got to power, there's a thing called the Night of the Long Knives when he murders Röhm and 200 of Röhm's supporters. But while the Nazi Party was rising, it was well understood among the people that this was a gay movement. They were an openly gay movement. The Hitler Youth, the nickname from the people was the Homo Youth. They used to call them the Homo Youth. It was so well understood that the Brown Shirts were gay, and that all the young teenagers in that movement were sort of the playthings of the leadership of the SA. This was well understood at the time.
Wow.
But they were extremely violent, and Röhm actually believed that homosexuals were more violent than heterosexuals. That you could sort of, if you're really in a real homo cult of men, produces some pretty violent people. And that these could be used for political warfare, and that is what they used them for. And that's what the book, The Pink Swastika, was about. And that publishing that book got someone's house burned down.
That's amazing. So, and this is convenient that it's been ignored. I haven't heard that. You know, so is there who's censoring this? I haven't heard anything about that. One of the things that everybody says about Nazi Germany is that they were actually very homophobic.
You'll find it online.
Yeah, I'd love to read it. That sounds, everybody listening, read the Pink Swastika.
That's very interesting. Really good book. In fact, they've got enough information online that it gives you the basic out there. It's a real story, and it's really true. It's something I've also noticed about fascist movements in other countries. Very powerful gay streak amongst the leadership. It's a very common trait. And sometimes they're in the closet, and sometimes they're not.
Let's link it to what's happening now in our schools. You talked about how I talked about how transgender kids were walking through the halls. Propaganda is, you know, lining through the halls in something that's called the Gay Sexual Alliance Club. This is happening all across school districts, all across America.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, this isn't a city school that I'm talking about. This is a rural school in a very conservative Republican neighborhood you know, surrounded by conservative people. There's conservative school board members, but still it's happening, right? It's happening at many schools. I can't imagine how bad it is, you know, in New York City, and then, you know, even worse in Los Angeles and California. Yeah. So how does that link? Like, how do those two things connect for you?
You have all sorts. In the United States, there are national educational entities. The federal government has a Department of Education. It imposes all sorts of rules and standards and personnel onto the educational establishment, even at the state and local level. When you get deep into the population control movement, you uncover scores of smaller organizations who are, you know, dedicated, like 9 to 5, get up and try to get schools to impose programs like that. They go around talking to school boards. They go around talking to school principals to do it. They've also got the National Union of Teachers. They're completely on board with this. Lesbo leadership all down the line there.
Right.
You know, so they're imposing that on them. So they're deeply embedded within the bureaucracy at the national and state levels. Local people don't matter. Local people are going to, they're supposed to control the boards, and there are fights right across America, fighting over the control of the school board and of the school libraries and that, and that fight has to go on. But it's sort of a David and Goliath thing going on with the big national bureaucracies and the big state educational bureaucracies. A lot of money, sophisticated strategies to promote these things, and they're just, it's just ridiculous. It's not ridiculous. It's insidious.
It is insidious. I think one of the things we have to be careful of. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, one of the population control freaks, they want to eliminate all unwanted pregnancies. That's one of their spiels, right? And their complaint is that there's too many teenage girls. They're not reliable. They're not taking their contraceptive pills on the right days at the right times. They're forgetting to come back and pick up new sets of pills. This is a real issue for population controllers. I mean, they're trying to suppress the fertility of these teenage girls, and they're not reliable enough. So they want to switch them all over to long-term injectable sterilants that'll last at least 6 months. This is going on across America, across the world. They're trying to replace the pill with just a jab that's going to keep you sterile for 6 months, 3 months, whatever. The problem is, this is complete bogus, but one of the groups is complaining that the teenage girls in California aren't coming in for their jabs on a regular basis. So what we want to do is shoot them all, teach them all how to inject themselves and give them hypodermic needles and stuff and send them home with it and do this at school. They want the high schools to show teenage girls how to inject dope.
Yeah. What they're doing also is they're keeping it from parents.
I assure you.
Yeah, they're trying to separate parents from their kids. They're trying to isolate these kids and get them in, basically corner these kids and have adult teachers who the kids are supposed to respect as authority in that school to tell them that they're transgender, to tell them that they have to hide it from their parents because they know that parents are not going to go along with this. That's one of the key things. You're basically starting a movement within schools with kids against their parents, rebelling against what their parents want, rebelling against, the traditional values that their parents might hold, for this new ageism that's really floating through the schools, with transgender youth. And for me, this is a huge thing because although a lot of people are tempted to laugh at this issue, are tempted to laugh at kids identifying as cats, kids identifying as deer, kids identifying as a girl when they're a boy or a boy when they're a girl, these aren't things to laugh at. We're witnessing the collapse of our country, the collapse of our values, the collapse of our school systems, which are put in place to educate kids, but instead they are using them for a political and ideological agenda. That's nothing to laugh at. It might seem funny, but like not too long ago, it was thought of as insane that two people of the same sex would marry each other, and now look at where we are. If these things are left unchecked, then they continuously, exponentially get worse and worse and worse. And that's not anything to laugh at. So this transgender issue is a very serious one, and it's one that needs to be corrected and fixed with all of our might. William Kay, I want to give you a chance to tell everybody what you're doing next, plug in, where they can find you, where people can reach you, and stay in touch with you personally.
These days, all I'm doing is posting articles online. I just posted one on Canada Free Press. I'll be posting a few more. I'm doing a lot of shows at TNT. That's probably the best place to catch me. But I'm trying to synchronize my writing so that articles will appear just before shows. And this is going to take some planning. And I'm going to do that. Yeah. So that's something that's going to be coming soon. Just keep an eye on TNT. And some of the shows will have articles that will advertise the upcoming show.
Awesome. Well, everybody, look up William Kay. Make sure to read his articles. He's incredibly informed. I've had a great conversation, William. Thank you for coming on. You were my first guest ever. So excited to have you on, and we'll
Absolute
see you very
honor.
Soon.
Absolute honor,
Absolutely.
Owen, and I hope it's a great thing. Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, bye-bye. Thanks for coming on, everybody. We are joined next time by Tyler Nixon. He is coming up right after the break. Everybody, thank you for tuning in again, and make sure you guys tune in after the break. A very, very special guest coming up. Tyler Nixon joins me after a short break.